see things that the public doesn't. Therefore, who is the enemy? Who's our true enemy? They don't have to be like blood enemies that we want to shoot them or anything, but our true enemy is popular thinking. Our true enemy is what the masses think and how they react to their thoughts at the betting window. So really, all of us who subscribe to mainstream thought are merely joining the enemy. Those whose money we must win in order to make a profit. A very essential part of this is for you to know what the statistics of racing are. We got some IRS figures, finally. The IRS says there are 21,000 people in the United States who possibly make some profit from betting horses. And they're talking about thoroughbred, harness, and quarter horses. There is a possibility that 21,000, period. And they're probably high because they're taking those people who win once in a while. These are projected figures from what they have garnered from the IRS. This is why the IRS is not particularly interested in horse players, so to speak, because they just don't think that there will ever be more than 21,000 who will ever make any money on it, and probably they won't make enough to worry the IRS, so they don't really harass horse players too much, or handicappers as we would prefer it. So that's their figure. The true figure is nobody knows how many different people go to the races. 65 million go through the turnstiles every year, but I don't think more than 11 million of those are different people, if that many. It might be 7. I asked the Thoroughbred Association, the Harness Owners Association, how many different people, and they said, boy, wish we knew. But they do know this. We do know this from computer studies of betting trends and betting habits and interviews with people, that only 5% on a given day will go away from the track with more money than they came with. Of that 5%, only 1% does it consistently day in and day out. Maybe another 1% does it a little fairly consistently and breaks even or makes a little bit money. The 21,000 would indicate that 2%, that the federal government, the IRS, is looking at 2% of the total. So let's expand from our 1% and say that 2% of the people who go to the track come back consistently with a little more or a lot more than they came with. 3%, 3 of that 5%, then would be just luck players. They play mama's phone number, their grandfather's security, social security number, or their license plate, or their phone number, or their birthday, coupled with their dog's serial number or something. And they are the lucky ones who might win $85,000 on any given week, but they don't do it consistently. So 5% on a given day. Now, you can't say the rest are losers. Let's examine the little old ladies with that hat pin. They do pretty well. Playing the jockey's silks and playing the post position number and putting that hat pin through and betting all the numbers it touches, they break even. 20% of the people break even, which is to say they neither win nor lose substantially enough to call it a loss or a win. That leaves 75% who are losing substantially enough to support the 5% who win. So if you make 10,000 or 20 or 50 or 80,000, as some of our people do, a year, you know that 75% of the people who go to the track had to lose enough to provide you with that annual income. Don't get the idea that it can be much different from those figures, because the mutuals will go down substantially the more winners there are. So that's why we have limited our participation in this to 1,000 people. With 1,000 people, we don't feel we can possibly hurt the mutuals. Now, for every 1,000 that we'll take, you take 1,000, there are probably 5,000 people who have been exposed to it, but are misinterpreted it and can't win with it. You do not win with a method, you win with your ability to optimize the use of the method. And that's why we're having this little session before the regular session. To optimize your ability to use the method.
So
getting back to pinning down the variables to the viable variables. If you had to use all 186 of Tom Ainslie's prescribed variables that he said may go into the winning of a race, you could never be. There would be no winners except by accident or luck. What Tom Ainslie was doing was playing it safe and filling space in a book. He was not telling you how to handicap. We got it down after several months to the true, what we called, viable variables. The first viable variables we had was in the earnings box. We could get it down to 68% from the top four from any three combinations of uses of the earning box. Average purse value, earnings per start, and in-the-money finishes. All of those, singularly or together, would produce the winner in the top four at least 68% of the time. When we combined them into what is now the class formula that is in the APV class formula computer program, when we combined them, they were even stronger. They went much farther, higher than 68%. So there was our first viable variable. The use of the earnings box properly. And remember, see, we didn't say we're going to get the one winner out of this group. We're not going to look for one winner because you'll never find any single factor. Well, we have now, but you never would, under ordinary circumstances, find a single factor that could win 68% of the time. So you have to start with the top four, and we have always stretched that to top four in ties, which leaves you with five, which is why we insist that you hone your weapons so that you can get the race down to five contenders. Because if you get it down to five contenders, you will, through the process of elimination through your computer program, have the winner at least 68% of the time. Okay, the next viable variable came in pace. We tried everything. Final time. We tried all those angles, remember. Remember, back then, I had no knowledge, so we're not talking about what the method evolved into. We're talking about nothing. A vacuum from which something would be evolved. We found out that breaking the race down into three or four races was the optimal way to evaluate a race. So then we took it fraction by fraction to find the value of each individual fraction. We took the second call to find the value of the second call. We did composites, many, many different composites. And ultimately, the composites we came up with were early pace, sustained pace, and factor W. We're talking about simple phase three now. Factor W, the top four factor W's, if you use the other factors to get narrow it down to the top four, was winning in excess of 68% of the time. The early and sustained values were dependent upon how a track was running, and their value was, you know, one early meant nothing if the track was running sustained, so they had to be correlated with each other. We found out that factor X was the best corollary of any. So we kept into the method factor W, early pace, sustained pace, and factor X. Dickton's going to go over the definition of these later on here. We got a blackboard or anything? Did you find out? There's something behind. Oh, you have something to pass out. There was no theory involved in any of this. Andy Byer in this column calls me a theorist. I am not a theorist. Everything I ever did, I put practical dollars through the window. We did not do research or we did a lot of research without going to the track with old racing forums, but we made no conclusions or no statements of accuracy on any of those factors until we put money through the window. It cost me in the first 5 years $24,000 to A, bankroll these convicts. I never let them spend a dime of their own money. You can probably see why. A, I could have been arrested for complicity in a felony, leading convicts to doing bad things. So I bankrolled every one of them and supervised their wagering and spent a lot of money on a mainframe computer at the University of California in Riverside. So I spent $24,000 in actual money, and I lost about $3,200 fooling around with this thing till I got it right. So I had paid my dues in losses, too, betting $2 and $3. That's tough to lose $3,000. So $24,000 bankrolling them and betting myself and in computer time and a mainframe computer until we got it right. I guarantee you, if you can teach 32 convicts with gambling-related felonies on their rap sheet to win, that you people should be a lead pipe cinch. Any convicts in the room? Anybody been arrested for compulsive gambling? There are some compulsives in this world. There are some people whose resistance is so great that you cannot overcome it. And we have some in the method. Let me describe them. Some people will buy a method or a system, if you will. They don't have systems anymore. One thing we did was change the language of system sellers. They're all selling methods now. If you buy methods purely to prove you can make them fail, then I would say you will be allowed to fail. We won't try too hard working with you. But you won't believe it, some of you probably, because you think that's stupid. But there are people in the United States who buy this or any other method just to work it and say, heck, told you none of this stuff works. And they spend thousands of dollars buying these things to demonstrate that they can't work. They get a perverse pleasure out of it. If you're one of those, I doubt it, but any of you are one of those, you've got problems. Resistance is the worst plague that anyone can have. Now, you got to say, hey, wait a minute. Any preacher will tell you that. Hey, if you resist my religion, you're going to go to hell. Well, that's an unfortunate thing, that if you go to the Roman Catholic Church or the Presbyterian Church or the synagogue, and you go there merely to protest and merely to tell the preacher or the rabbi or the priest they're full of, you really shouldn't be going. You should either start your own or live in your own conviction. So if you have to approach handicapping almost as a quasi-secular type of religion. You have to say, I have absolute faith in me first, you as yourself, and you have faith in the method you're using. If you have no faith in the method you're using, no blind faith, I'm talking about real blind faith to start with, and no faith in yourself, does anybody think you'll ever be a winner? You cannot win without faith in yourself. You have to say, I, Joe Blow, can make this work. I know this to be true. I took stuff that I'm sure all of you have thrown away. I made it work. I took Ray Talbot's pace calculator and made it work. I took that calculometer by whatever his name is, Isaiah. I made it work. Yeah, that's the guy. Why did I make it work? Because I infused it with my own determination. That didn't work real well, don't get me wrong. But if you really have the determination that you are going to win, you can make virtually anything work. What I love is the guy who sees 685 people making their living with this method and say, it ain't no good. It's a rip-off. Well, we give that guy his money back so fast you'd make his head swim. If a man has no faith in himself, he thinks everything's a rip-off. If a man has no faith in his own ability, he looks at something and says, that's too hard, I can't understand that. There is nothing in any of our manuals that is hard. It's just a little foreign, that's all. William Wall said in 1975, the successful handicappers of the future must learn an entirely new language, that the hossy language that sustained horse players would not suffice for the handicappers of the next generation. And he was right. What has happened with some of the terms we have introduced into horse racing? Well, Tom Ruhammer, who keeps his finger on the pulse of the mainstream, says that most of our terms have now been adopted as common phrases in the lexicon of handicapping. What did they call pace lines back when you started? They called them running lines, didn't they? Now everybody's talking about pace lines. Now they're talking about sustained pace and early pace instead of the speed. Just to know what the speed isn't should put you ahead by light years. What is the speed? The speed is a term defined by first by Ainslie and then by Bill Quirin as a horse running first or within three lengths or of the leader. First, second, or third, or within three lengths of the leader. That's the speed. Hey, one of those can be an early pace horse, one can be a sustained pace horse, one can be a presser, or the one in the lead might be a sustained pace horse right off it. It's not where he is, it's how fast he is running to be where he is, and how much energy does he have to dispense late. So the speed is what the public still uses. They see a horse go out in front, they say, the speed's holding on today. Wowee, and they go bet the fastest early horse they get to, and they lose. Del Mar and Saratoga are good examples of that. A lot of vacationers go to the track, and a lot of horse players follow them. And Del Mar is supposed to be an early speed track, according to the public, and it's a sustained pace track. We clean up there, and the public loses there because they think, because a horse goes wire to wire, that the speed is holding on. The speed, folks, is determined by how much energy a horse exerts early and how much he exerts late, or with our newer programs, the median. If he has not enough energy to finish the race, he can be as far out in front as he wants and he ain't going to make it. But if he gets out to an easy lead and is still exerting the proper amount of energy at the end, he's not the speed, he's a sustained pace horse running on the lead, and the public doesn't know this. You have advantages over the public right now, just with this small bit of knowledge, without even having to turn on your computer. You know things automatically the public won't recognize, and none of the experts will recognize it, because the experts are stuck with their own particular area of expertise, and their reputation is built on it, and their books are primarily erroneous. And I'm talking about the big names. The answer lies in, do the people who follow their procedures win, and A, B, do they win? Well, I've sat next to all of them over a protracted period of time, and it would drive me crazy if I had to win the way they win. If they win. Going 17 to 20 races without a winner, and then finding a horse is going to pay $9 and putting $2,000 on him and getting it all back. That is the essential way that your so-called experts who win get it. Then you have another few experts who don't win but write wonderful books. All of them are quote-unquote good friends of ours. Dick knows them too very well. The viable variables is what we must pin it down. Everybody you'll read will tell you that the horse race is composed of certain variables. If you can get it down to the three fractions and the second call, which is four, early pace, sustained pace, factor W, and factor X, which is another four, that's eight, and then the earnings box, which can either be three or one, but you've got it down to 11 variables. If you want to take each one of them, that's all there are, 11 variables. And if you know how to master those 11 variables, you're going to win at the races. And if you want to listen to someone who says there's 184 variables, you're lost before you start. So we concentrate on effectively and optimally using those variables. And 680 of us, of our not quite 1,000 yet, are making their living at the track. We're always going to have 28% of our people, and I don't want you to be in that 28%, who will flounder, who will question, say, oh, I can't pick the right pace. I've never seen it. Whenever I've been for second choice, the third choice wins. Let's go into that. Some of you, any of you had your experience in your initial handicapping that your third choice or your fourth choice is winning all the races? Anybody? Great. Probably more of you would have raised your hand if you'd... Here's why, folks. If you keep handicapping the way you are, you just play your third and fourth choice. But when you get better, they won't. You are sticking horses into the computer who have one good fraction, and they're robbing your top two choices of their proper ranking because you're putting wrong horses in. A lot of people say, hey, I can get it down to five horses. I got the winner in the top five, but never in the top two. You put the wrong five in, folks. We're going to go over the procedures, Dick is, of using the pluses, the zeros, and the plus within a zero to mark every horse in the race, to go up and down his past performance and assign a zero or a plus within a zero. The problem with a lot of you is you are putting horses in off of zero races. We have no business doing it. Why are you putting them in? Well, because I just want to take a look at him. If you put a horse in the computer, just take a look at him, and take him out of you. You want to put in the best early horses who have a chance of finishing the race. You want to put in the best pressers. And if you have any problem knowing the distinction, Dick's going to go over it with you. And you want to put in the best sustained and the best late. That could be four or could be five horses if you put two pressers in. But put in the horses who actually match up as having a chance in this race. Don't be putting in some horse because, oh, I like that horse. I owe him. He made me $48 back in January. Yeah, it's $5,000 today. It's an allowance race. You put him in just because you like him, and he lost by eight lengths. He could have been running against a very fast pace and come up with a good number somewhere. And what does he do with that one good number? He robs the rightful horse of a higher number than he's going to get if you put in some wrong horses. Believe me, we're not talking off the top of our heads here. I've looked at other people's races for...
Please fast forward and turn over.